You're listening to the Urban Warfare Project podcast from the Modern War Institute at West Point. I'm John Spencer, Chair of Urban Warfare Studies at MWI and host of this podcast. Today's guest on the podcast is Major Florin Herrera of the Armed Forces of the Philippines, a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point and recipient of the prestigious Nininger Award for Valor at Arms. The warden recognizes graduates who have demonstrated exceptional courage in combat and a commitment to leading from the front, both qualities that Major Herrera embodied during one of the fiercest urban battles of the 21st century, the 2017 Battle of Morawi. During that five-month campaign to liberate the city from ISIS-affiliated militants, Major Herrera led troops in intense close-quarters combat, building by building, block by block. Today, we're honored to have him on the podcast to discuss not just the tactics and terrain from that battle, but the leadership challenges and lessons learned under fire from Major Herrera. Major Herrera, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me at your show, sir, and for the opportunity to share the lessons I learned from West Point and from Marawi.
Great. Thank you. I'm excited. As somebody that's written the case study on the Battle of Morawi, followed it, but to get that firsthand information from a veteran of the battle. But before we start on the battle itself, I'd love to start with your story. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey to West Point, why you chose to serve, and how your career path led you to the Battle of Morawi.
Good evening, sir. I'm Major Florin P. Herrera, class of 2013 from the Philippines. Before getting to West Point, I started my journey at the Philippine Military Academy. I spent a year there as a cadet and was one of the top cadets in my class, which gave me the chance to take the qualifying exam for West Point. I've always pursued excellence, and West Point has long been known for that. So when the opportunity came, I embraced it wholeheartedly, knowing it would challenge me in new ways and help me grow as a leader. So while at West Point, one of my unofficial sponsors was Mr. Julius Flores, class of 1985, who lives now in New Jersey. Like me, he also started at PMA before going to West Point, and he had served as a scout ranger in the Philippine Army. He shared powerful stories about the ranger life, their discipline, the missions they took on, and what it meant to be part of that elite unit. I also learned from him that the founder of the Scout Rangers, the late General Rafael Ileto, was a West Point graduate too, class of 1942, and that really stayed with me. So even then, as a cadet, I felt drawn to the same path. So after graduating, I volunteered to become a Scout Ranger. It's a unit known for being deployed to the most critical and high-stakes operations in our country, and eventually that path led me to Marawi.
It's an amazing story of the long gray line. I mean, that connection. Thanks for sharing that. Okay. So I wanted to do something. I've done this before with like the Battle of Fallujah, where I want to give listeners a quick summary of the battle, just like the five W's. But they can go read, or you can if you're listening, the full Modern War Institute Urban Warfare case study at www.mwi.westpoint.edu to read the full case study written by me, Liam Collins, and Jason Giroux. But in summary, the Battle of Morawi began on May 23rd, 2017, when Islamic militants affiliated with ISIS, including members of the Matawi group and Abu Sayyaf, seized large parts of the city of Morawi in the southern Philippines. Their goal was to establish a South Asia caliphate. What followed was a five-month-long urban battle, the longest in Philippine military history since World War II. At the time of the attack, Morawi was a thriving city of over 200,000 residents, many of whom were displaced almost overnight. The militant force was estimated at over 1,000 fighters, who quickly fortified dozens of city blocks using snipers, IEDs, tunnel systems, and human shields, creating a dense urban kill zone that proved extraordinarily difficult to penetrate. The Philippine military, supported by U.S. advisors, launched a clearing operation to systematically retake the city. But the fight was slow, brutal, and costly. The armed forces of the Philippines had over 160 soldiers killed in action and over 1,000 wounded. While almost all of the militants, 1,000, were killed, and an estimated 47 to 87 civilians killed during the battle. Most of the city was destroyed. The battle was officially ended on October 23, 2017, exactly 5 months after it began. But its legacy continues to shape the Philippine military's approach to urban warfare and counterterrorism. So, let's talk about the moment the battle started to unfold. Where were you when the things kicked off on May 23rd, 2017? And how did you first learn that ISIS-linked militants had taken over Morawi?
When things kicked off on May 23, 2017, I was actually at home on a delayed academic break. I had just finished the basic infantry course, which ran from around October 2016 to the end of March 2017. But instead of taking the academic break right away, I immediately reported back to my unit. And around that time of our graduation, I was told that the battalion was planning a mission that we were short on platoon leaders. That's why I had to go back to my unit. The mission turned out to be the three-day battle in Piagapo, Lanao del Sur. We engaged hundreds of fighters, and the place is just about an hour away from Marawi. And weeks after the operation, I was finally granted the academic break, and then Marawi happened. I actually first heard about it on the news. At that time, my unit was conducting combat operations in the jungles of Bukidnon. And so they had to walk days and nights just to reach Marawi, where they ended up receiving the mission of rescuing the trapped armored personnel. As soon as I saw what was happening, I tried to reach out to my company commander and asked to return. So when I eventually got in touch with him, he told me to wait. And he said, "We are doing all right here, and the fighting will still be here when you get back." I rejoined my unit on June 12, 2017. By then, our company commander had to be pulled out and be brought to the hospital, as he had gotten sick and injured from the long trek and the operations from Bukidnon to Marawi. I stepped in as the officer in charge of the company. I can't recall exactly how many weeks he was out, but as soon as he returned to the main battle area, I resumed my role as a platoon leader. But honestly, there was really no difference between the two. Whether I was acting as the OIC or a platoon leader, I was still out there leading teams and platoons in the fight.
So I really, at this point, love to hear your story of your unit. I know I'm sure the mission changed throughout, but whatever the part of the unit operations you wanted to tell us.
The first mission of my unit was to rescue the armored personnel who got trapped into the initial days of the fighting. By the time I rejoined them on my unit on June 12, 2017, the unit already completed the mission. And at that point, when I returned, our objectives were clear: rescue the trapped civilians, destroy the enemy forces, and help secure the city. I came in already aware of the scale of the conflict. In fact, I brought with me the maps that were prepared by higher headquarters. I remember hanging them up in a cleared room and walking the troops through them. And that's when it really hit them how big this fight actually was. These were the same warriors who had fought during the Zamboanga siege back in 2013. But even they could see that Marawi was on a whole different level. Still, we were scout rangers. We are scout rangers. And while they were surprised by the intensity of the battle, especially after completing a tough mission to rescue the armored personnel, I did not see any hesitation from them. No signs of fear, no despair. What I saw was eagerness. They were ready to press the fight, rescue the civilians, and finish the job. And that mindset was what carried us through the fight.
Amazing. So what was your, I know there's lots of challenges, but what was that first mission once you deployed into your sector in Morawi?
Well, when I got in there, the first thing was, to act as the commander, the OIC. Yeah. So as soon as I got there, I've not been in the fight. So I was trying to, get back, pretty much to get into that level as them, because they've been there for like 2 weeks already, like almost about 2 weeks already. They already like finished a mission. So I was like, I'm getting in. I'm like the acting company commander. So I have like, you know, I had to show them that I was as eager, or I was more eager than those guys are. So as soon as I got there, I had to bring in my uniform. Well, I had to put in that, you know, that full combat gear, and, you know, told my company command group, you know, the RPG gunner, like a team, like, hey, let's go start clearing rooms. So that was how I set, you know, my first day leading those guys in a mission.
So when you took your platoon, I'm sure your mission changed for your platoon when the commander came back. Then what operations were you doing?
Well, it's pretty much the same thing. Like, nothing really changed, you know. Nothing really changed from when I was the acting company commander as when I was back as a platoon leader. Because, like, you know, as the OIC and as a PL, I was still out there leading troops on the ground, leading teams, leading platoons, like in the front lines, clearing buildings. You know, in Marawi was a constriction, you know, like, well, as you already got it, like, in your study, like, you know, we had to isolate the city, constrict it. So it's pretty much like an inch by inch clearing, an inch by inch destroying enemy forces along the way. So as soon as I got there as the acting OAC to PL, that same challenge, that same mission went on.
I bet. So as, like you said, the study and what we cover on the podcast, urban warfare is a unique type of chaotic, dense, constricted, and very personal type of warfare. What were the biggest leadership challenges you faced fighting in that environment, and how did you prepare yourself and your soldiers for that fight?
Yeah, as you said, urban combat is chaotic and deeply personal. Well, one of the hardest leadership challenges was keeping myself and my men mentally focused while we were constantly hearing about people we knew, people we are close friends, like, you know, dying. Some of those guys who gave the ultimate sacrifice were actually with me in my Ranger course. Some were my classmates in my Scout Ranger orientation course, some in my basic airborne course, and even in the last course I had, the basic infantry course that I just completed. Two of the close friends from that course were killed in Marawi. It reached to a point where it felt like, you know, the life we had was no longer ours. We were still breathing, yes, but it felt like we had already given that life so we could keep fighting. I remember asking myself, when is it my turn? And then there was a kind of a quiet acceptance. And somehow that acceptance helped. It allowed us to stay composed, to lead without panic, and to make sound decisions in the fight. We had a saying, the more hesitant you are, the more likely you are to die. And it's true. If you're afraid and you hesitate, you give the enemy more time to reposition, to aim, and to fire. In that environment, hesitation was deadly. So I always reminded my men and myself to be aggressive and to be decisive. And that mindset was just as critical as any weapon we carried.
So I know, and we talk about a couple in the study, and we talk about the Scout Rangers in the study, but can you walk us through some of the defining moments during your part of the battle? And I know that operational security is a concern, but so whatever you can, and those events, whether it's taking down a strong point, a dug-in enemy, something that became really defining moments for your experience in that urban battle, and then maybe something that tested your leadership or something that was really a really hard decision in these defining moments of the battle.
One defining moment for me during the battle wasn't a single day or just single decision. It was something that built over time. As the fighting grew more intense, we were clearing buildings, moving wall to wall, street to street, and along the way, we had wounded personnel. But as we pushed forward, something started to grow within us. Like I said, a while ago, I said, like, there was this acceptance that, you know, that we would also give our life fighting. But the thing, though, is like something along the way, you know, something started to grow within us. This belief that maybe, just maybe, we could accomplish our mission without losing anyone. So I made a personal commitment to my platoon the men I was leading up front, and I told them, we will not lose anyone. And if someone had to fall, it would be me first. There were times that I had to act as a point man in clearing rooms and crossing exposed streets. Well, naturally, the Scout Rangers, my men, would not allow it. But I insisted. My own instruction to them was, if I go down, find a way to pull me out of the kill zone. Well, they actually let me take a few point a few times until they started disobeying that order. They began rushing ahead of me, staying one step ahead. And at some point, the new challenge wasn't pushing them forward. It was holding them back. Their aggressiveness became something I had to manage carefully. And I'm just thankful that before Marawi, I had already fought alongside them in Sulu and in Piagapo. By then, I had already earned their respect by leading them from the front. And they knew I would not ask them to do anything I wasn't willing to do myself. And that foundation made all the difference in how we moved as a unit.
I imagine. Okay. So you have a unique background, clearly, as a West Point graduate. How did your training and education at the academy shape your decision making and leadership under fire in this crucible of combat in the urban terrain?
Well, as a cadet at West Point, I took chemical engineering. Well, they said, like, you know, those cadets who take the course or some, you know, they put in words like, are you crazy or that stuff? And I know a lot of cadets, might not realize it now, but the sleepless nights, you know, doing problem sets, writing papers, dealing with constant deadlines and pressures from all directions, that's not too different from combat. In combat, the stakes are life and death. And at West Point, the stakes are whether you make it through and become the leader you're meant to be. In combat, winning means staying alive, keeping your troops alive, rescuing hostages, and neutralizing the enemy. At West Point, it means graduating with the character, discipline, and the competence to lead. And a keyword for both is excellence. If you haven't embraced excellence as a personal value, if you're just going through the motions, then the Thayer method, the pressure of West Point, won't prepare you to lead under fire. But if you internalize that standard, it becomes a foundation for the hard calls you'll make as a leader. And that's just the academic side. There's also the physical training, the military leadership, and character development. One experience that really stuck with me was during CLDT, the Cadet Leader Development Training. Even though it was just a training environment, it gave me perspective and experience I needed to be a better leader when it counted. Well, do you want me to talk more about that?
Sure. Yeah, it sounds amazing. And as a former CLDT instructor, it's music to my ears, but go ahead.
Okay, so everybody knows that the end of CLDT is like, you know, a 60-hour, like, culminate, like, FTX, like, where you have to stay awake for 60 hours, right? Just a few days, and I was a squad leader. As a leader, I was not that type of leader who empowered my guys to step up. I was not that kind of leader who empowered them to voice out concerns. I was not the type of leader who, to empower them to correct me when I was not, I was not telling them something right and I was making wrong decision. So I learned from that. And that pretty much, like, has shaped me as a leader, like going into combat, going into getting missions in Sulu, like getting missions about, race and that stuff, about making sure when I make decisions, I'm not doing it in a way like I'm getting affected with the emotions that I had. And that too with how I deal with my troops, and with that, how I always encourage people to voice out concerns, how to, like when I say something, you got to make sure when you're thinking, otherwise you're always free to voice out your recommendations, all that stuff. Because, at the end of the day, decision making is always going to be, weighing factors. There may be factors that I think I saw, but there may be factors that they have seen that I have not seen. So that's pretty much like, I learned from that. And one more thing is why I always encourage my guys to speak up, because, especially part of the brainstorming, part of the planning is you know, I don't want my guys to keep following, you know, whatever plan I make for them, and then blindly following them. And then when we go into combat, they're just following it blindly and still thinking like, maybe we should be doing this, maybe we shouldn't be doing that, because that's dangerous. It's like all the contradictions, all the discussions, brainstormings happen during the planning. And after the planning, everyone should be at the same page. So the thing is, you know, when they think they have better solutions, they got to make sure they voice it out during the planning. And that is, you know, that is a venue of whether or not I can make a better decision, change the decision based on what they say, or inform them that, you know, the recommendations is not feasible because I have already, you know, it's already part of the considerations that the planning team, you know, me and my subordinate, you know, the subordinate leaders have already considered. So at that point in time, you know, the troops, the guys, regardless of what their rank is, whether they may be privates, whether they may be sergeants, corporals, you know, they know that, you know, whatever stuff they were thinking in that decision, you know, in that brainstorming, it was already answered, like, you know, that, oh, no, we can't do this because of this. So everybody's on the same page. Everybody's like, you know, going on the same direction as we head into combat.
I'm happy you got that experience, that learning experience. But that's why we train hard, is to learn those type of lessons, not on the battlefield, but before. So I had a question about Mawari, and it came out a couple times about, you know, the fighting you'd done previously. In the case study we study, you know, and you talked about your company having to do the march, but that transition from jungle warfare to urban warfare, what did you see as the big differences in that, in those two different styles of fighting? Because I know that in general, the Philippine military wasn't prepared for that level of a high intensity urban battle, and they were literally coming off of a mission from doing jungle warfare and being placed into urban warfare. What were the challenges, and was there something in your up to that point that helped you think through that, or whether it's West Point training or something else that gave you some of the tools you needed to do that transition?
Well, in my part, urban was not that new, because I had to go through urban training at West Point, and for the troops I led, Marawi was not new to them. Urban fighting in Marawi was not their first time fighting. Again, as I mentioned a while ago, they were the ones who fought in Zamboanga. So basically, Zamboanga was, you know, that surprise stuff for them, like that surprise factor. But the thing was, before Zamboanga happened, those guys had a crash course in CQB, had a crash course in urban operations. And the thing is, that's basically what they needed. That's just the stuff they needed to be successful. Because, you know, as scout rangers, the experience that we have, that's something that's built in, like, you know, years, in decades, all the stuff, the traditions of the scout rangers. So the thing is, you know, as I always meant, the thing is, like, the thing that I also mentioned to cadets too, the thing that I also mentioned when I talked to cadets, the Asian Pacific Airlines Club cadets at West Point, the ones I had the honor of engaging with, the cadets, like, I mentored a PMA, the officers I taught at the scout ranger school. The thing is, the principles of leadership, the principles of the offensive principles, you know, the infantry operations, everything is the same. The fundamentals are the same. What differs is, you know, just the specific actions, but the fundamentals, you know, the reasons why we do stuff are the same. So the thing is, like, you know, when that basic stuff was taught to the Rangers, everything pretty much, like, went smoothly, because they knew, like, you know, the cover, taking cover, support by fire concept, all that stuff. So, yes, it was surprising when it comes to, you know, going from jungle to, you know, and adjusting on the basic TDPs, specific actions, clearing one building to another. But, like, you know, a scout ranger will always take cover, you know, will always, you know, approach the enemy by surprise, all that stuff. So I don't think that you know, there was a problem for us going to that. It may have been a problem for the other units, you know, like But the things like the Philippine Army has been fighting, you know, whatever, and like even the infantry battalions, we've been fighting like, you know, for decades now. So I don't think, you know, I don't think that's really much of a factor, especially with Scout Rangers, you know, because there's this thing, like right now I'm in an office. I am part of the Scout Ranger Capability Development Office. And, you know, we do the strategic, you know, we plan for the Rangers' future strategic direction, right? And part of that is, you know, the capability, you know, the capability development of the regiment. And part of that capability development, we have this thing. I think you also have that in the US, the .MLPF format.
Yes.
The doctrine, organization, training, material, leadership, facilities, personnel, that stuff, right? It's kind of like, you know, you measure the capability of that, of one unit based on that capability development. You make sure you develop a unit based on that, you know, capability development components. But a thing that I always mention is like, you know, something that is not included there, or maybe it's already under personal, is experience, right? Experience. And you cannot, you know, you can't just take away experience. You can't just input experience. So one thing is, you know, for an example, there's a new mission, right? There's a new mission, something that's new for anything. Something like you, the thing that's like you're saying about Marawi to Scout Rangers. There's a new mission. There's this, you know, group of guys, there's this unit that's been training for that mission, right? It's kind of like they were formed, they were organized to accomplish that mission. But they lack experience, right? They don't have the experience in the actual fight in that mission. But for Scout Rangers, we may be new to that mission. This is not, you know, this is just some, I think for me, it's like, you know, an actual, you know, assessment. Personal, it does not reflect that of the Philippine Army. It does not reflect that of Scout Rangers, but just for me, right? You know, observing stuff, trying, studying the behavior of units, you know, learning, comparing one unit to another. But for the Scout Rangers, it's like, you know, it would only take a few, like, you know, a small crash course. And that unit, that, you know, that group of Scout Rangers will do better than that new unit without experience, without fighting experience, you know, without, you know, tested experience. These Scout Rangers will do, I think these Scout Rangers will do better than these guys. Why? Because at the end of the day, you know, in Marawi, the things that we did in the first day, we were no longer doing in the second, on the third day. I'm sorry, the things that we did in the first month, we were no longer doing it on the second month, on the third month, on the fourth month. So everything is pretty much like, if you're thinking of it as something new, everything is new. What matters is the experience. What matters is leadership. What matters is the willingness to move forward despite getting into a new environment. What matters is like, is that willingness to do it. What matters is that, you know, that experience, all that stuff that would give you like understanding the fundamentals. So I hope I'm clear though.
No, you are. Yeah. And it's actually highlighting, you know, those qualities across militaries of combat performance and those key qualitative features that come in leadership, training, cohesion, adaptability, all these things. Absolutely makes sense. So after 5 months of this grinding battle, the Philippine flag was finally raised over the city. What did that moment mean to you, your men, and the country? And really, where does the battle sit in your military history?
It meant everything. It meant everything. Civilians were saved. The city was secured. And once again, our soldiers showed the Filipino people that what heroism looks like, the willingness to fight and day and die for our country. And for us, it wasn't about celebration. It was a moment of reflection. That flag stood for sacrifice. It stood for those, you know, the fallen comrades that we had. It stood for those, the civilians, the police, everyone who died in Marawi. It stood for resilience and the duty we carried to protect our nation.
So, Major Herrera, I think I'll end it there. Thank you. Not only for your service, but the example of courage, humility, and leadership. Your experience in Marawi offers a powerful lesson for soldiers, leaders, and listeners around the world. Getting to know you and your experience from cadet to Mawari and continuing to go on for human capabilities development. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for listening to the Urban Warfare Project podcast. The podcast is produced by the Modern War Institute at West Point. What you hear in each episode are the views of their participants and do not represent the positions of West Point, the Army, or the U.S. government. You can subscribe to the Urban Warfare Project podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app. And be sure to check out NWI's other podcasts, as well as the new articles we're publishing every day on our website. Thanks again for listening.